Right, good morning. Tuesday, November 26th, 2024. Approaching Thanksgiving. Well, we're always approaching something, I suppose. Approaching and moving away from something. And at the same time, we are only ever here. Anyway, don't let me start becoming profound. Nothing more annoying than profundity. We're here just to
So like this.
to be normal, let's just be normal, whatever that means. So we're going to start with 20 minutes of meditation, and then if I think of anything to talk about while we're meditating, I'll do that. I tried once today, it didn't work, so you never know. The heater just went off. Anyway, Zoom doesn't allow you to hear the fan, I'm pretty sure. All right, sitting back, just settling into whatever is the most supportive posture for you. There are formal postures that are perhaps most conducive to concentration and clarity. But sometimes our bodies aren't really ready for that kind of formality. So I trust you to find what works for you and, experiment if you need to. It's not helpful to try to, fit into some mold. We either with our bodies, molding our bodies, or with our minds. Just settling into stillness. You can close your eyes or just lower your gaze. And the reason I say that is that not everybody's comfortable closing their eyes. Of course, we're not together in a space, which is where people can particularly be uncomfortable. If you have something that gets triggered in a group. But I also find that there are times when opening my eyes for just a moment can kind of interrupt one of those mental excursions that just carry me into an unhelpful place. Just remembering that I am here in this body, in this space, and opening the eyes can kind of break that and bring you back into the present. Oh, just to mention that, since I give that instruction so often without any explanation. And taking time just to feel the body, feel yourself sitting in stillness. Noticing your relationship to your body, to feeling your body. Is there comfort in that, or is there some sort of resistance? Is there a restlessness? Is there a numbness? What do you feel? And feeling the breath moving in the body. You can make a little more effort to pay attention to the specifics of breath, the specific sensations. You can pay attention to the feeling of air, the nostrils passing in and out of the body, or the feeling of movement, diaphragm and the belly. Or you can see if you can be aware of the whole breathing experience. Not trying to exactly concentrate, but rather to just have awareness of breathing so that there is still awareness of the body, the rest of the body. Awareness when thoughts or other perceptions pass through the mind. Awareness of emotions that arise with the breath holding you to the present moment. The breath is, of course, a reflection of impermanence. It is a manifestation of impermanence. And yet it has a consistency that can be grounding. More steady than the of chaos of mind, the streams of feeling don't have the same kind of form or rhythm that we can kind of lean on with our awareness. You know, when we find ourselves like completely lost or drifting away, can make a little more effort to come back to the breath. At times, judiciously used noting can help us to kind of break through when things get a little busy. Sometimes just noting in and out with the breath, or noting thinking. When the thoughts or feelings, or if the thoughts or feelings become difficult, become uncomfortable, you can bring in an attitude of kindness. This too could include some words, if that helps. May I be happy, or simply I'm okay right now. But the words aren't the key. The key is an attitude of gentleness, of kindness, of caring toward your own emotional challenge. Your feelings are there, breathing and having a sense of caring for this, learning to awaken this kind of loving overseer, caretaker in our heart. All right. Well, as it turns out, something did come up for me that I was actually realized I'd been thinking about. That is the question that applies to both recovery and to meditation practice of following a system versus trying to do sort of like moment by moment intuitive response to, what's a what will work in this moment. And so just to talk about those two things, and I don't not gonna I try not to take sides, although I'm a bit biased toward the non-system approach. But just to say, for example, when I got sober, and I suspect this is true of many people, particularly if you started in AA or started in a 12-step program, first of all, I had no clue what I was supposed to do other than not drink. And so, I wanted to know how to do it, right? And so right away you're kind of like, what's the system? And of course the steps suggest that there is a system. When you see there's these 12 steps, this is the system you're supposed to work with, right? And then when you hang out in 12-step meetings, you discover that there are other kind of or the part of the oral tradition of recovery where people, 90 meetings in 90 days and get a sponsor and be of service and the different things that people suggest that may or may not be directly in the steps or even in the literature. And there's no doubt that when you are a newcomer, that it's really a good idea to work within the system, right? Because why are we there? Because we were trying to run the show ourselves. We were trying to control our drinking and using, our behavior, and thought we were fine, and we weren't, and things fell apart. And it's wonderful. I'm grateful. I know most of you, all of you, I don't know, are grateful for what was there when you showed up, and what was there to carry you and to hold you. Probably very few of us would have managed to figure out a way of getting and staying sober and going through the kind of transformative work that 12-step and other recovery programs lay out for us, things like inventory and amends, and things that are very can be very uncomfortable, right? But feeling that, okay, I need to do this, and so I'm going to do it, and then having the support of a community, all of that is just invaluable, right? And I'll say that when we come to meditation, I think it's very much the same thing, in the sense that, like, what's meditation, right? I heard this word, it sounds cool, I want to do it, I think it'll help me. But when it comes down to, well, what do I do? There's very much a sort of like, I don't know, it looks like people sit in a funny way, and I don't know, maybe they repeat a mantra, or they're saying something about breathing, I don't know. And so having guidance and a system really helps, and particularly because the mind, I used the word chaos during the guided meditation this morning. It's one word for it, because the mind is so, without structure. I'm sure there's a better word for it than that, but formless and constantly generating stuff. To sit down with that formless stuff that just seems to be pumped out and try to deal with it without some kind of system, can be overwhelming. And I know the first time I tried to meditate, it lasted like a minute, and I was like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing, forget it. And it was, and so then I sought out, a TM, because that was like, it's a system, you do this and then this happens. And then once I got into Buddhism, I was very much drawn to the Vipassana systems of noting and doing loving kindness as repeating phrases. And so that there was a structure, trying to bring structure to this formless thing, trying to bring form to the formless mind, and put boundaries around it or control it, or and with the hope that if I apply enough effort and discipline, that my mind will start to settle down, that the chaos will recede, and something resembling peace will arise. And so absolutely, in these two systems, form as the Mahayana, as the Zen folks with the Heart Sutra refer to it, form and formlessness is incredibly valuable. And I don't know how many of us could get here without it as a starting point. And as you can, and I'm not saying but, I'm saying and, over time, form can start to become more limiting rather than freeing, right? And this is where we run into the real challenge, right? Because if we're talking about the addict, the rebelliousness of the addict, right? The go it alone attitude of the addict, the I know better than other people thinking of the addict, can come in and and undermine our recovery, right? Thinking, well, I don't want to do it this way. And anybody who's been around 12-step rooms or other recovery spaces has seen people try to jump into this kind of, or even n not even be willing to work within the system. And and it's some people can do it, right? So I'm not saying that that's not possible. It's not, that's, I think it's a mistake to claim that there is only one way. However, it's a high risk way, to like, I'm going to do it my own way. And even at an early stage of recovery, to decide, oh, I don't really need these meetings anymore, I don't need these steps, or I don't need a sponsor, or whatever, is increases risk. But as I say, there comes a time when we realize, I'm actually established in this. Something deep, the roots have really been planted in my recovery. And this person, for instance, the sponsor conundrum, right? This person is sort of trying to run my life, and they're actually just another human being, and it's not really working for me, Or, I've been going to a meeting every day for the last 5, 6, 8, whatever, 10 years, and I want to take a class, so I won't be able to get to my men's meeting, I don't think I'm going to relapse right now, because, if we think of our recovery and our spiritual process practice as trying to move toward freedom, and we realize, there's a point at which we're actually limiting our freedom. We're losing freedom. We're not allowing ourselves to experience the whole of life. Or, a typical thing, and I've heard this from people, like sponsors saying, "Oh, you shouldn't do this." Like, I'm gonna go to a meditation group on Sundays instead of going to my group, my AA group. Sponsors like, "Oh, I don't know, that's not gonna blah blah." And I was like, "Okay, but so again, this is really a very personal decision, and we have to be really careful with this, particularly around recovery, because of the stakes in recovery and the dangers of relapse, to really be confident that we are ready to branch out, to with so there's that. Okay, I'm trying to keep this as sort of open as possible, not because I know that for some people, going to a meeting every day for the rest of their life is really what makes them happy, and it's beautiful. I mean, it's really lovely. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm not talking against that. It's really about, to me, coming to trust ourselves and coming to understand ourselves, and our own needs, and what is most useful for us. And that can take some experimentation, and we might make some mistakes along the way. Shocker, right? Now let me turn to the meditation side of this question, which I find actually more interesting than the recovery side. As I said, when I learned meditation, it was very much with structure and within a system. And I was trying to fit my mind into that system. And I found that comforting because I always knew what to do. That if my mind is wandering, I'm just going to note that, and then I'm going to come back to my breath. I'm going to try to feel my breath until I notice my mind has wandered. But as with what I've described with recovery, I found, and actually quite a bit more quickly, I found that this started to feel oppressive. It started to feel like, well, there were a couple things about it. One was there was a very like black and white quality to it, like, oh, my mind is wandering, that's wrong, that's bad. Oh, I'm on my breath, that's good. And so there was this duality built into it, which was uncomfortable, because along with that duality was a judgment, good, bad, right, wrong. I'm failing. And then it also felt, it came to feel, particularly on, my first long retreat, it came to feel artificial. Like, and the way I describe this is meditating from the neck up. It just started to feel like it was just a mental exercise. And that it wasn't embodied, it wasn't, when you hear like the language that the Buddha uses, and that phrase that I love, pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with loving kindness. That it didn't feel like my practice was pervading my body or pervading my mind or imbuing my mind. It felt like I was checking off boxes to this, and then it also felt like this, as I say, oppressive. Like I'm trying to hold it down, I'm trying to control it, because in that duality of like thinking is bad, then there was always a push against thinking, and even talking about it, it's like, feels like oppressive to me. And so Because I broke out of this on a longer retreat, and on a longer retreat, when one can get into a more organically settled place that doesn't require constant monitoring and a system, because things just get quiet, or quieter. And even when things get busy, it's easier to just come back to the quiet because there's this baseline created. So in that retreat, I was able to like, oh, there's this other way of being with this practice that feels more organic, that feels more fluid, that feels more holistic. Feels like I'm in my body and I'm aware there's a certain awareness of my mind. It doesn't mean my mind isn't drifting or I'm not losing my focus at times, but I'm not, it's not experienced as a problem in the same way. It's more like a flow where I'm like more present or less present, and more settled or less settled. So there's a risk in this, which is that one just gets lazy and just starts to, you get good at just sitting there, but you're really not meditating per se, and this is the risk of the getting too comfortable in your meditation, or you're really not monitoring. Term I picked up from Manalio, which I like. So the idea then is that there still is monitoring going on. That is to say, I'm sitting, I'm feeling my breath, I'm aware of my body, I'm aware of feelings, and I'm kind of keeping an eye out for, am I lost in daydreams? Am I falling asleep? Am I getting restless? Am I striving? Am I drifting? So those are the kind of monitoring things. But there isn't necessarily a system. So, I've been taking this course and Joni's been in my group. On the Anapanasati Sutta, and which is offered by Anallio, and then through the Barry Center for Buddhist Studies, and I've talked a lot about the Anapanasati over the last couple of years, and something I've worked with a lot. But at times it feels like I'm being pushed back into this systemic way of working. It can feel natural, but that it again, you kind of have to, I think, so maybe to bring all these things together, the meditation and the recovery, is that we're not throwing any of it out, right? I'm not throwing meetings and steps and, service and inventory out. I'm not throwing mindfulness, concentration, loving kindness, right effort. I'm not throwing any of that out. I'm saying, what's so the term monitoring is a helpful one for both, right? Like, what's going on right now? And what I have a set of tools, and I've worked with these tools for a while now, right? This is assuming you've been in recovery for some years, and I would say minimum 5 years, ideally 10 years before you start to really feel like, okay, I've kind of got this, kind of have my sense of how this works for me, and I'm monitoring how I'm doing. And the same thing with meditation, like, okay, do I need to put more structure in here, or do I need to settle back, and where do I need to put my attention? What's the most useful place to put your attention? Because it again, we have these systems that say, oh, pay attention to your breath, okay, or the Goenka system, feel the sensations through your body, move your attention through your body, or repeat these words, may all beings be happy. And so we have these tools that are, yeah, those are useful, but we need to sort of say, well, what's happening right now? It's why, in the middle of the meditation, I said, like, notice if there's like some uncomfortable feelings that you want to bring kindness to. Like, that's one of the things that I monitor when I'm meditating. That's like very high on my list of monitoring things. It's like, is there a sadness? Is there grief? Is there just a angst? Okay. I need to, again, only through practicing, having practiced a lot of formal loving kindness, have I developed the capacity. We develop these capacities, right? Develop this capacity to more or less non-verbally evoke a feeling that I bring to it. And it's hard to, you, I'm not sure you can even teach that, which is one of the reasons why, most meditation teachers teach structured systems, because it's hard to teach non-structured, non-systemic ways of meditating. But ultimately, meditation is not about form, and the problem that happens, and again, this happens with recovery too, is like we get so attached to the form, but if it's not connected to our felt experience, to our lived experience, to our how we are actually being, then we get disconnected. And relapsing happens, or unwholesome activities start to slip in unwholesome mind states, because we're not actually taking care of ourselves. We're just, being good little soldiers. Yes, sir. Let me. Okay, I'm thinking, noting. I'm writing my inventory. Okay, good. Yeah, but what's happening in here? What's really happening? It's tricky, right? Because we're asking ourselves to trust ourselves. And part of AA is to learn not to trust yourself, frankly. I mean, this is the process, right? You come in and you learn that you can't trust yourself. And then you have to learn over years to trust yourself. And so when do you, are you allowed out of the womb, if you will, the AA womb, to go on your own 2 feet? And there's nobody to tell you that, right? As a sponsor ever said, I think it's time for you to not have a sponsor anymore. No, sponsors don't do that. You have to do that. You have to fire your sponsor. And man, watch out. Don't tell anybody you did that. The first thing they'll say is, well, who's going to be your sponsor now? I don't have a sponsor. I fired that guy when he told me I was going to relapse if I put my name on the cover of my first book. Oh yeah, like, but I mean, it was an AA. I call it the AA curses. There are AA curses. If you do that, you're going to drink. Well, that was 20 years ago. I haven't drunk that since then. I mean, I still could. I'm not saying I won't, but pretty sure that that was magical thinking, and it was the end. I mean, I'd been with him for a long time. He'd gotten me through some just and did incredible things to save. I don't know, save my life, a term overused, but r improved my life radically. Incredibly grateful to him, and it was over, and hasn't been a problem, so this is I mean, I think you can see how I see this process, but let me be a more explicit, which is that I see systems as vital for entering into meditation and recovery. structure, systems, routines, all of that vital. And there can be, for many people, an evolution toward less form, which is always tempered by and supported by the fact that anytime we need to revert back to more form, like, oh, I need to start going to more meetings, or I want to have a sponsor, or I'm going to work with a very structured meditation, you know, that we're always ready to do that, that we're not shutting the door. It's not like I figured it all out and solved everything, but just right now, what seems to be make sense is this. So, you know, spiritual evolution, right? If we're not evolving in some way, then what are we doing? You know, if we're just trying to fit ourselves into a box and walk around, spend the rest of our life in that box, I mean, it's better than being an active alcoholic, I guess, if we're talking about recovery. But it'd be nice to have more than that, you know, to live outside the box. So there you go. Thank you for your listening, and I'll be interested to hear any responses, any questions, any corrections. Well, there's a direct message sent to me that's a little long, so yes, so it's just someone saying, you know, that they've kind of moved more towards recovery dharma and Buddhist practice and yoga, but there's still the fear that since I am not active in a program, I'm at risk. You know, and I'm not sure that's an unwholesome. I mean, I don't want to live in fear, but let's just call it monitoring. You know, let's just keep monitoring whether that's fear based or not. I don't think it's a bad idea to like just have a little suspicion about it. You know, I trust myself and verify. What is that? Trust and verify. I don't remember where that comes from, but it's sort of, you know. You know, I have to keep an eye out. I mean, you know, I'm married, and my partner, my wife, is a really good monitor for me. You know, she certainly isn't my sponsor, but you know, as with all good solid marriages, if I can say this, you know, she's my most trusted advisor. And I kind of count on her that if I'm going off track, that she kind of calls me out. You know, it's not my sponsor, but you know, there. So yeah, I don't. That's kind of what I depend on. Anyway, not to go to. All right. Wow, some hands up. Interesting. Okay, it's yeah. Let's go ahead, Deborah. What's up?
Good morning. Yeah, I think that any, whether it's recovery or meditation, it has to have some personal choice or interaction involved.
Yeah.
I had a hard time with AA even recognizing the structure because my first couple of sponsors really wanted to thrust me within the Judo Christianity. Let's pray before we, and I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
And then I found Refuge Recovery, and that was fine, and did some counseling. And that really worked for me. And then my counselor suggested that I didn't necessarily, she'd be happy to take my money, but, and so I quote unquote fired her. But we left that really well. And then within the Refuge Recovery group, we stopped Refuge Recovery because we wanted to read you. And within Refuge Recovery, you can't read anything. And so we opted out, and now we read anything. And that's all good. And Now, within our group, I found several Kalyanamitas, which is kind of a version of a sponsor. I can go to them, or now I belong to a Sangha in Santa Barbara, and there's people there that I trust with, inner. I don't have turmoil anymore, so I can't even say that. There's no danger of relapse. It's all good. So thank you, and you're a great teacher.
Lovely. Thanks, Deborah. Monica.
Without regurgitating everything, but I'm kind of agreeing with everyone. I've also had the experience. It's interesting to have enough time where you can't find somebody that of my, that I could have as a sponsor and has more time. And so a friend and I decided to be closed mouth friends to each other. Also, and it was very odd to go without a sponsor for a while, because my last sponsor, God rest her soul, she helped me get well when I wasn't well, and but she ended up with dementia, and to my, as far as I know, she's passed away. It's been a while, but it was really odd, because, and then I did try, but nothing would stick. And so I'm just trying to trust one day at a time. But I wrote down here that I don't think I was truly ready until I could truly get ego out of the way. And there is, the Buddha says there isn't one, but the part of me that still wanted to be unwell, and I'm not going to say that person doesn't come back, because I have little moments, but that's just what I was thinking about. It's just, but it was very strange. I because everybody tells you, oh, you can't do this the way you're, and but then I was also, see, ex when I was chairing in a treatment center, and these young people were reporting being thrown out of AA meetings. The minute they said anything about their drug addiction, I said, this isn't right either. This is the first meetings they're arriving at, so this is unkind and not accepting and not inclusive. I mean, they don't have to, they have to be kind, treated with kindness, not with, with rancor. So, so.
Thanks, Monica. Do I sense, Mickey, that you wanted
Yeah,
to
I do.
speak?
Can you
Good.
hear me?
I can hear you.
Hi. Thank you, Kevin. I really appreciate the, well, I appreciate, but I appreciate that the kind of the loose package of recovery, and the loose package of Buddhism that, I always think that I should be meditating better. We've talked about this, and I still think that. And I actually, I'm very superstitious, so I go to meetings every, like, I have regular meetings, and I go, and I haven't had a drink or a drug for not, I can't say I haven't enjoyed the drugs I've had to take, but I have not taken them for enjoyment for 40 years. I'm not worried that I could get loaded. I could, like, wake up and be loaded, but I go to meetings because it's what I do. It's worked really well for me. I go to like one meeting a week, one Al-Anon meeting a week, to try to rein in my big mouth. But, I'm superstitious, so I don't like to fix what's not broken. And it's not in my head at all. It's like, okay, I'm going to go to a meeting because that's what I do, and I don't drink because that's what I do. So there's kind of a link between them for me. I don't feel terrible if I miss meetings. I just like to go because it seems like the right thing to do for me.
And at the end of the day, for me, it's like, am I enjoying this? Not just like, is this good for me? But so it's great. It's
I go to meetings I enjoy.
yeah, I'm sure you do. That's lovely.
Thanks, Kevin.
Yeah, thanks, Mickey. James, hello.
Hey, Kevin. Hi, Kevin, thanks for the topic there. Yeah, a couple things came up for me was I started out in the Zen tradition, and it was very structured on the outside. And even beginning, it was, counting breaths kind of thing. But at some point, teacher would get us into shikantaza, which is a more open awareness, which I think is what you're kind of talking about, more of a inclusive as opposed to exclusive meditation, and for kind of a formless meditation. So, although on the outside it appeared very structured, rigorous, formal, the meditation itself, when you get to the shikantaza portion of it, was formless, and I actually really enjoyed that. As far as with recovery goes, yeah, I had a my first sponsor. He was actually very intelligent. He was in Mensa, and I think they actually encouraged him not to come anymore because of his alcoholism. So AA was kind of his new thing, and he would throw this verbal jiu-jitsu on me whenever I would have a question about the program or something. And we eventually parted ways because I mean, his service work was just phenomenal. I mean, yeah, I think he slept like 4 or 5 hours a day, and he's always doing service. And he was kind of putting that on me, and it just seemed, I think he kind of took it to an extreme to some extent. So, kind of parted the ways. But the thing is, after this last election, I mean, I'm down here in Georgia, and feel kind of outnumbered. Even in the rooms, got a lot of Trumpers in there. And anyway, so I had to contact back with him, and yeah, thank God he wasn't a Trumper. I didn't think he was, and we got talking. But I don't know how he does it. His wife is a Trumper, and he went to some family function in Montana, and the whole family was, and but he navigated those waters, and so my kind of contact back with him. I'm trying to do the same thing because I'm the black sheep of my family. I'm the only non-Trumper in the family, and yeah, so it's kind of isolating down here. So, but anyways, so I was kind of going off on that, but yeah, I kind of got away from the structure of AA, but I'm diving back into it, and but I really like the Dharma recovery program more so because it's not quite as, you got some Bible thumpers down here, the Judeo-Christian thing, but yeah, you got some that are like my sponsors, more open kind of things. So anyways, all right, sorry for rambling. Thanks for letting me
Yeah,
through.
thanks, James. I wish you well down there. I spent some time in the South this summer, and there's a lot of good folks. But maybe you got to seek them out a little more. You don't just trip over them like you do in Berkeley. So, Paolo, I know I saw you the other night over at the sitting group, and I was like, I know that guy. Now I remember who you are.
My connection cut out, and then
Oh.
it started to cut out again. I wasn't sure if you were saying hello to, like, as soon as you started, and I heard, I remember you from Berkeley, that came through. So,
Yeah.
and thankfully it came back enough for me. I really appreciate that, and I'll be able to make Spirit Rock meeting every month, and I'm tuning in from work now. And I've got my Bluetooth secure here, so can't wait as focused as I would be if I was home, but it's working. And I thought today's topic was a really good one. And I found that, that form and improvisation.
Well, not surprisingly, I think Paolo dropped off. Well, maybe that's an indication that I will mention something just in the realm of, oh, what? Oh, there you are. We can't hear you though. Your audio is kind of cut out, Paolo. It's not really working. I'm sorry. In my occasional forays to establish a so-called social media presence, I recently signed up for Blue Sky, the supposed like alternative to Twitter, and I've been doing like little daily reflections in there that I'm taking from my book and re reworking them into short little things. So if anybody's interested in having a little hit from Kevin each day, if people start following me, I'll keep going, but I'm not very persistent with these things. Every time I start to do them, I last about a week, so I'm about 4 days into it. But it doesn't seem like Buddhists are really interested in Twitter-like encounters, but if anybody is, get Blue Sky. I've got myself just as daily reflections as my, I don't know, it's not even my, I don't know if it's my handle, I don't know what it is, but it's what it shows up. So I hope all will be safe, sober, and serene for Thanksgiving. And I'll be back next Tuesday, and then it'll be December, and I do have some other things happening in December. So Spirit Rock on the 29th in person, and then of course the Berkeley Buddhist Monastery the second Tuesday. So I hope to see people in person. Otherwise, I will see you on here on Tuesday mornings. Many
Happy
blessings.
Thanksgiving, everyone.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kevin.
All
Thank
right.
you, Kevin.
I'll be doing 5 days at Sea Ranch after next Tuesday.
Oh, good for you. You know, Walt is going to go up there.
Really?
Yeah, you might look for him on the bluffs.
Yeah, I'll be doing silent retreat 5 days by myself. So
Very good. Very good. Enjoy.
I will. I'll see
Love
you
it
next
up there.
Tuesday.
Okay.
Bye
All right. Take
bye.
care, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin, as
Thanks.
always.